went out skiing with it, I tried to button up my camera into my chest and have it pointing out between two buttons. I used to actually always ski with a button-down shirt, which people made fun of me for. I think it's an East Coast thing because my friend from the East Coast still does it, in fact. Nevertheless, I remember skiing in St. Mary's Glacier in Colorado with my little lens poking out between two buttons. I made it halfway down. The camera fell out, rolled down the hill, and crashed into some rocks. Surprisingly worked after that. So I decided I had to think of a way to mount it. I do want to say this was two decades before GoPros, and so I didn't have a template to work off of. So I spent a while trying to figure out a way to attach it to a helmet. And I used to kayak a lot, so I tried duct taping it to a kayak helmet. I first tried on the very top of the helmet, but that really hurt my neck as I would crank out the turns. So I tried it on the side of my head, but that was too heavy, and I needed a counterbalance. So we're at Powder Shots, where we worked, there was a gigantic, like an industrial tape dispenser. So I duct taped the tape dispenser to one side and the camera to the other side, and helmet cam pretty much worked from then on. But it was fairly big and cumbersome. I think it weighed in between 10 and 12 pounds. It was one of my very first stakeouts. A big part of my job as a private investigator was to basically spy on people. These were people who, at the time, we had a contract with the state of Wyoming, people who were allegedly defrauding workers' compensation. Now, usually, I do think that the state was quite cognizant of infringing upon people's liberty interests. So by the time I got called, usually it was they'd been collecting workers' comp for many, many years, and maybe a lot of tip-offs. This person's elk hunting or bowling or snowmobiling or whatever. And so I was on a stakeout in the middle of nowhere, windswept Wyoming. And it was one of my first ones. And you all see those shows of people, private detectives, and they're sitting in the front seat and they're drinking coffee. And that's just not what you do. You sit in the back with curtains hanging on the windows of the van. Hopefully a nondescript van that you're in. And in any case, I had been drinking a lot of coffee, and it was early on. So one thing I quickly realized is that you need to bring a pee jar with you when you're going to be on surveillance. And I didn't have one. So in a pinch, I used a cup from the Burger King coffee to relieve myself. And then after I'd finished my business, I put the cup in a cup holder in the back of the car. A short time after that, the subject actually got into his pickup truck and took off. And very anxious to follow him, I took off very quickly also. Was about to pull out in the road behind him, but a tractor trailer was coming along, so I had to jam on my brakes. I didn't think much of it, but I followed the guy. Actually ended up getting some good footage of him loading a sofa in the back of his pickup truck. But in any case, I got back to the surveillance spot, to his house, and a little while later, I think he started to notice this van, and he got a little suspicious, and he came over. So I scrambled into the back seat, and I was kind of cowering in the back seat while he was peeking through the windows trying to see something. And as I'm sitting there cowering, very, very scared in the back seat, I all of a sudden feel dampness on my shoulder and my thigh, and turns out when I jammed on my brakes, I had spilled the coffee cup full of urine, and I was cowering in it at the time. I wanted to jump up, but I couldn't because this guy is looking through the window, so it was a slightly uncomfortable situation. Actually, as I was working as a newspaper reporter, I wrote a story on behalf of Rotary, saying they were accepting applications. They were going to send between 4 and 6 people, and they had to be between the ages of 25 and 40. They were supposedly at the beginning stages of their career, and they were going to send them to India, the idea being they were going to study their career abroad. And then a Rotary district from India was going to do the same about 4 months later, send 4 to 6 Indians over to Wyoming to study their professions abroad. And this was actually right after September 11th, 2001. And I think that because of that, people were a little gun shy as far as international travel. And it turns out that very few people had applied for this amazing opportunity, which was a 5-week free trip to India. And so I ended up throwing in an application and interviewed with a lot of district Rotarians, and they eventually selected me. And we stayed with 9 different Indian families, so that was wonderful. We got to see a lot of historic sites in India, which is fantastic. We took a detour to see the Taj Mahal. To be honest, there was a little less study your profession than I imagined, and there was actually a lot of people from India trying to forge business relationships with people from the U.S. So we had a lot of people wanting to show off our country's not a third world country. And so we did a lot actually of come see our internet cafes, or look, we have a water park here in this town. And that was a little interesting. But obviously seeing the Indian culture was what I went for. And that was the most interesting thing. I did fortunately get to visit about 4 newspapers when I was there. And it was kind of funny too, just because there's such a huge population there. They were talking about, this is a small newspaper because it serves a population of 1.1 million. And I'm thinking, you know, my newspaper, what was the circulation of the guide? I think it was 11,000 maybe. The first couple days we were in India, it was a district conference. And so there were several thousand Rotarians. We were in the town of Udaipur, however it's pronounced. I can never get it right. I'll say it's like a diaper. But nevertheless, we sung Home on the Range in front of maybe 60 or 70 slightly disinterested Indians. And that was fine. But a guy from the local Rotary Club came up and said they were having what was called a cultural program that night. And if I came, maybe I could play the guitar. And I kind of tried to back out of it, saying I'm nervous and I haven't played the guitar much lately. And they said, oh, just play some chords and people will dance and it'll be chill. So I got there and they dressed me in a kurta pajama, what the musicians wear, which is actually just pajamas. I walked into the auditorium and there were about 1,000 people in it, and I was terrified and I sat down in the front row and I sat and watched some of the acts for a while. And then I heard a bunch of Hindi that I didn't understand, but it ended with them saying, "Ad Bushnell." And so I got up there and I was so nervous. I could only remember a couple songs. And one of the songs was, The Gordon Lightfoot's Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. So, you know, legend lives on from the Chippewa down of the big lake they call Gitchigumi. I don't think this guitar is in tune. It is, it's just bad playing. So in any case, I did that, and I tried to play the beginning chords of Slip Sliding Away by Paul Simon, and people were kind of interested in it, and they were asking for another song and kind of cheering me on. And I couldn't remember any other song except one song off the Beatles' White Album, which is my favorite album of all time. And that song is Why Don't We Do It on the Road? So I just decided, well, I don't know anybody in this country. I might as well go for it. And I did. It went over very, very well. I had people cheering. It was wonderful. I had somebody the next day ask me, tell me the song sounded very passionate and ask me if it was about religion. So that was fun. I played that song. It went over very well. So I tried to get off the stage, but they actually called me back up to do something else. I was so nervous, I couldn't remember how to play any other songs at the time. So one little party trick that I've always had is I play Flight of the Bumblebee on my cheeks. And so I got up there into the microphone, and sure enough, I did, which I could do if you want. So, all right. And so on. And that went over very well. And in fact, that became known as the cheek tabla. And for the next 5 weeks as we traveled around India, everybody asked me to play the cheek tabla.